Radio Prague News.
Cardinal Miroslav Volk has addressed child abuse in the Catholic Church, saying priests' education in sexual morality must be reassessed. Amnesty International has released a report censoring the Czech Republic and Germany for exporting products intended for torture. And the Czech tennis player Nicole Vajdišová has retired at the age of 20, according to media reports. Cardinal Miroslav Volk has addressed the recent wave of accusations of child abuse against the Catholic Church, saying that it is necessary to reanalyze the way priests are trained in sexual morality. Writing on his website, the head of the Czech Catholic Church called the alleged acts of abuse an offense to God and primarily a gross violation of the human dignity of helpless persons. He also concurred with the Vatican that the institution of celibacy is not to blame for the scandal. Czech priests have not been implicated in the new scandals in which hundreds of allegations of child abuse have been raised against Catholic priests in six other European states. Cardinal Volk wrote that in the 20 years of his leadership of the Diocese of Prague, he has never received any word of a case of child abuse by a church official. The International Human Rights Association, Amnesty International, has released a report stating that the Czech Republic and Germany are exporting products that are intended for torture. Amnesty says that the two countries have taken advantage of legal loopholes to permit the export of police equipment and coercive devices, such as shackles that give electric shocks, to at least nine countries where they are used for torture. According to the organization's report, these sales have continued in spite of EU-wide control measures adopted in 2006. The report is to be discussed in the European Parliament's Subcommittee on Human Rights on Thursday. Czech scientists have discovered a potentially important method for curbing the growth of cancerous tumors. A team at the Institute of Molecular Genetics in Prague found that tumors force surrounding cells to provide them with proteins for their growth. Stopping that process could also restrict the growth of the cancer cells. They have now patented their method and hope to find a pharmaceutical company that will invest in the production of a medicine. The method is the second promising result of cancer research in the country in the last year. In 2009, scientists at Prague's Institute of Microbiology developed a substance that cuts off the access of tumors to a blood supply. In sporting news, the Czech tennis player Nicole Vajdišová has retired at the age of 20, according to media reports. Vajdišová reached the semifinals at two Grand Slam tournaments and in 2007 got as high as the seventh in the world rankings. However, her career has been going downhill for some time and she is currently ranked 176th. One tennis website reported that Vajdišová, who is the girlfriend of Czech men's number one, Radek Štěpánek, was evidently tired of losing matches and had no desire to return to the court. Now turning briefly to the weather, conditions over the coming days are expected to be cloudy to partly cloudy, with daytime highs rising to 9 to 13 degrees Celsius. I'm Christian Falvey, and that's the end of the news.
Hello, this is Radio Prague, and I'm Sarah Barufka. Welcome to the program. Today, young Czech doctors are up in arms over their pay and conditions. Czech tennis star Nicole Vajdišová retires at just 20 years of age, and we'll hear from the One World Film Festival about one journalist's quest to interview the perpetrators of genocide in Cambodia.
He spent 10 years trying to find a way of getting the truth about the killing fields from the people who ran the Khmer Rouge and from the people who did the killing.
Then later we talked to the Czech archaeologist Karel Nováček about a major find in northern Iraq. All that and more coming up, so do stay with us. Young doctors getting residency training at clinics and hospitals in the Czech Republic are increasingly unhappy with their working conditions, with some saying they have no option but to leave the country. The Young Doctors Group, which is made up of medicine graduates, is mainly concerned with the current system of receiving qualifications, though they also complain about low salaries. Ruth Frankova reports.
Young doctors in the Czech Republic who get residency training while preparing for professional exams only receive part-time contracts. In practice, however, they often put in full-time hours, for which they receive only part-time pay. Dr. Eva Kusíková graduated 4 years ago and now works at a department of anesthesia and intensive care medicine.
Basically, how it worked is that you got a very low salary from the hospital. You got some scholarship, not that huge, from the faculty, and you are expected to get some money from the grant for your scientific work. The problem is that officially you only worked for the hospital for about 4 hours a week, but in real life you worked full time, maybe even more, for almost no money at all. And this is how it worked for me for 1 year and a half.
But low pay is not the only problem. Under the current legislation, medical graduates have to spend the first 2 years at one of a number of what are called STEM departments. These, however, don't cover all medical fields. As a result, doctors who want to become, for instance, eye specialists spend the first 2 years of their practice without actually seeing an eye. Tomáš Kocourek is the head of Young Doctors Group, which was formed with the aim of changing the current system.
Because now, as I say, it's unfriendly for doctors. We want it friendly to the doctors, to the young physicians. The state and the ministry must make it easy or easier than now. This is the first condition. The second condition, but I think it's universal for all of the jobs, you want more money. But I think that money for doctors in Czech Republic are shamed. And the third way, we won't spend less time in work, because if you are in work 260 or 300 hours per month, you have no social and no private life, and this is a very big problem.
After a meeting with the Young Doctors Group in Prague on Saturday, Health Minister Dana Jurásková promised to change the legislation to prevent such practices in the future. However, doctors such as Eva Kusíková remain sceptical.
I would very much like to say yes, I hope so, and I always do hope so, but I don't believe it anymore, because young doctors, just many of them, will do the same things as I did, just because they can stay here in Prague and just because they can work in that clinic, and they will hope the conditions for them will improve. They will be willing to do it, and if not, there will be 10 other people who will be willing to do it in your place. So if you want to leave, just leave. I don't know. These promises, to me, they very much sound like, you know, elections are coming.
Dr. Eva Kusíková ending that report by Ruth Frankova. For the first time since the war, a shop with kosher food has opened in the Czech capital. Located in Prague's old town, just meters away from all the attractions of the Jewish town, the shop now offers groceries for the upcoming holiday of Passover. But the shop owners say much more is yet to come. Jan Richter went to see the new shop.
Whether you're planning to have people over for Passover dinner this year, or if you'd just like to try some of the delicacies of Jewish cuisine, you'll get all you need in King Solomon's Bakery and Deli, a new kosher shop that opened just off Prague's Jewish Quarter on Tuesday. The store offers matzos and gefilte fish, as well as meat, wine and many other groceries that until now were only available on the internet. One of the owners, Michal Ginsberger, opened a kosher restaurant in Prague in the early 1990s. He says a regular kosher grocery store was the logical next step.
People were asking, okay, you are producing food, please can you do for us a restaurant? Okay, we did a restaurant, which is used mainly by the tourists from abroad. But when the country was developing, more and more people show interest about the kosher food and the Jewish kitchen. But to run kosher restaurant, it's very expensive, and the prices are very expensive. Means our reason why we are opening and trying the store is to be like an embassy of the Jewish kosher food for the regular public.
At the moment, King Solomon's Bakery and Deli only offers groceries for the Passover holiday, as leaven products made from grains are prohibited during the two-day festival. The store's owner says they also sold things for the holiday last year, and the success made them consider opening a permanent store.
We opened it a small place for only 2 weeks next to the restaurant, and it was a big interest of the people. They were coming for matzah. Also, there's a lot of stories, like the old people came and they were remembering that even in Prague was produced at the kosher matzah before the war. It means the Czech people, they have some relation to this kind of food, and this is the reason why we also choose it this place, because it's a concentrated of people which are looking for gourmet in the bake shop next door, in the gourmand. This is the reason why we are here, and we are also very close into the Jewish quarter, because a few meters from here is the Spanish synagogue.
The store should soon open its own bakery and also offer kishka, pastrami and other Jewish specialties. Michal Ginsberger hopes that King Solomon's Bakery and Deli will become a popular stop for Prague gourmets and for everyone else.
I am not going to lie, it's helping us also the madness in Hollywood, because Paris Hilton and Madonna and what is the guy, Donald Trump, even Beckham, those people are eating kosher. Don't ask me why. Also, some of them are converting to Judaism, like Madonna, which was our customer. From the business point of view, sure, it's helping us that we can buy a little bit larger quantity, go down with the prices, and end effect is that it's more available for the rest of the people.
That was Michal Ginsberger, the owner of Prague's first kosher food store since World War II. Now, from food to sports. The Czech tennis player Nicole Vajgišová has reportedly retired at just 20 years of age. Vajgišová twice reached the semifinals of Grand Slam competitions and in May 2007 was seventh in the world rankings. But in recent times her career has been in free fall and she's now ranked just 176th. Reports suggest Vajgišová has simply grown tired of being beaten and has lost the drive to compete. Jan Wellinger has more.
Just a few years ago, Nicole Vajgišová was the Czech Republic's brightest star in the world of tennis, winning her first WTA title at the age of just 15, later reaching the semis at the Australian and French Opens. But somewhere along the way, her career began to sputter and then limp from defeat to defeat. The situation didn't improve when she changed her former trainer, her stepfather Aleš Kodet, after 2008, eventually sources say losing any desire to return to the court. Jan Jarov covers tennis for the Czech Daily Sport.
For me it's not a big surprise at all, because she was struggling in the past 2 years and she didn't get the results she wanted and she was used to have, so I think it's not a big surprise. She was, you know, she make a big step into the tennis court in a really young age. She was like 14 or 15 when she began playing on the professional circuit. So, and she had a really fast success. So it's always really difficult for these young girls. As I heard, she didn't like tennis in the past years that much like she used to. And it's really difficult to maintain the motivation and desire to be better and better.
But in Jan Jarok's view, Vajdishova had what it took to take her game further. Perhaps one reason some will be hoping for a comeback from her someday, no matter how unlikely that may appear at present.
Many people said that she could be number one in the world because she's got great talent, great serve, great forehand. She was a very aggressive player, and she definitely could be number one in the world. I think there is still a good possibility for her to make comeback, but I think it would be really difficult for her because she stopped developing her game in the past years, and she wasn't a complete player now.
Reports say that Vajdišová's nearest upcoming plans will include marrying fellow tennis player Radek Štěpánek, the country's men's number one, in July.
Thank you, Jan. And now for another report from the One World Film Festival.
I think only the killer can tell the truth, why they kill the people and who ordered them to kill.
the voice of Ted Sambat from Enemies of the People, one of over 100 films being screened at the One World Festival of Human Rights Documentaries in Prague. Ted has spent years tracking down and speaking to former members of the Khmer Rouge in his native Cambodia. The result is a series of groundbreaking interviews, including one with Pol Pot's one-time right-hand man. Enemy of the People's co-director Rob Lemkin told Ian Willoughby about Ted Sambat's remarkable journey.
He spent 10 years trying to find a way of getting the truth about the killing fields and the millions of people that died in Cambodia in the 70s from the people who ran the Khmer Rouge and from the people who did the killing. And it was a very personal, difficult mission. He was motivated by his own family who had died in that time. His father was killed, his mother died, and his brother was murdered as well. This is what really led him to keep going for 10 years, to gradually, weekend by weekend by weekend, make these people trust him and speak to him about the truth of what they did.
What has he achieved with this quest of his?
Well, he's achieved a much greater understanding amount of information about the Khmer Rouge regime than has ever been gathered before. And for his own personal point of view, he has reached a kind of an understanding of what it was, what the violence was that destroyed his own childhood world. And for him, that's a very important personal achievement.
Among those he speaks to is the so-called brother number two, or the second in command of the Khmer Rouge, Nun Chia. I was surprised that he would speak to anybody. I know he's an old man now, but I was surprised he'd speak to anybody at all.
I think that he is a man who wants to put his account of history on the record, and in doing so, he has come to trust Sambat as the person who can help him put that account on record. In putting that account, of course, he is admitting to huge responsibility for huge numbers of deaths. He's not denying that, but his feeling is that before he dies, he wanted to at least give Cambodians and people in the rest of the world his point of view on this appalling period of history.
Ted Sambat's method is to, over many years, build up the trust of these people. Did the presence of your cameras impede his interviews at all?
No, and by and large, the exclusive and extremely secret revelations that take place in the film are done by him alone. I filmed with him for the last 3 years. I was working out the kind of interviews and questions that we were going to put in the interviews, but for the very secret things with Nun Chia. And also there is a scene in the film where Nun Chia meets two killers and they all discuss, why they all were involved in such killing. This is the kind of thing that really only Sambat and a Cambodian that is trusted by these people could do.
Has the film been screened in Cambodia, and what's the reaction been?
Well, the reaction in Cambodia has been immense. It has not been screened there yet, but when the film first premiered in the United States at the Sundance Film Festival, it was the top news story for about a week in Cambodia on the radio and in the newspapers, and there is a huge anticipation for the film. We are currently negotiating that premiere, which we hope to take place in May in Phnom Penh.
Ian Willoughby was talking there to Rob Lemkin, co-director of Enemies of the People. In Thursday's program, we'll have another interview from the One World Film Festival, and Friday's Arts will also focus on the colorful festival. And now, it's time for this week's Czechs Today, in which Jan Wellinger meets Karel Nováček, a Czech archaeologist. His team uncovered tools dating back to the Stone Age in northern Iraq.
Czech archaeologists are best known for their work in Egypt spanning five decades, but some specialists have begun making headlines for excavation work in a different part of the world, Mesopotamia, the cradle of ancient civilization that is now present-day Iraq. Recently, an eight-member team headed by Karel Nováček of the University of West Bohemia returned from Iraq after having uncovered Stone Age tools that were used by our ancestors or our distant relatives, the Neanderthals. The tools date back some 150,000 years to the Middle Paleolithic, the oldest find of its kind in the city of Erbil in Kurdistan. Archaeologist Karel Nováček told me more about the Czechs' involvement.
Je to historicky skutečně poprvé, kdy Češi organizují vlastní vědecké.
Historically, this is the first time that Czechs have been involved in northern Mesopotamia. But we didn't choose Erbil, it more or less chose us. A private Czech firm specializing in historic preservation had been involved there since 2004, and consequently we were able to build on their activities. We got the idea that Erbil, a city whose history goes back some 6,000 years before Christ, would be ideal for a Czech expedition.
Si zasloužil samostatnou pozornost nějaké vědecké expedice.
The project, however, presented a number of restrictions that had to be worked around, namely that, unlike more famous archaeological sites, only Erbil survived to the present day. With a population of 1 million, it is the third largest city in Iraq after Mosul and Baghdad.
Je především jiný v tom, že ta známá severoasijská centra.
Unlike the Assyrian cities of Nimrud and Nineveh, which lasted only into the Dark Ages or the Middle Ages, Erbil survived. The former sites were consequently far easier to excavate. By comparison, in Erbil it is much more difficult to get under the surface.
Schovala a je velice obtížné se k němu dostat.
Because they were working in a living city, Czech researchers relied on different methods to narrow down promising locations, archaeologist Karel Nováček explains.
Co se týče té metody nebo toho přístupu, kterým jsme tam museli zvolit, tak samozřejmě
in Erbil it's impossible to excavate just anywhere, to cut out a chunk of area like archaeologists did in the 19th century. So we chose a combination of methods to piece together a mosaic, taking geophysical measurements that are non-invasive, studying existing buildings and terrain, and analyzing old aerial and satellite photographs. We looked at material going back 50 years before many of the city's ancient sites were altered or destroyed.
Zbytky toho města ještě na těch leteckých snímcích vidět.
According to the Czech specialist, the team was able to piece together slivers of information that built up a better understanding of Erbil as a whole, a city whose ancient center, known as the Citadel, rises almost 30 meters above the rest of the town. It and its surrounding wall is built on layer upon layer of ancient settlements and buildings going back to 6,000 years before Christ. A veritable gem for future research.
Ta takzvaná citadela, ona je to vlastně samostatná městská čtvrť dneska, která.
The Citadel appears to have an uninterrupted history going back 6 or maybe even 7,000 years before Christ. Within its layers, it retains remnants of the original monumental architecture of the Assyrian city, temples and royal palaces, and the Temple of Ishtar, and so on. When it comes to the rest of the town, we are on more hypothetical ground, but our research suggests that there was a wider area that was also part of an older Assyrian city.
Začátku prvního tisíciletí před naším letopočtem.
The Czechs operated outside of the plateau, benefiting from the planned construction of an enormous hotel and commercial center in the newer part of town. They were able to scope the site 9 meters into the ground, and it is there that they eventually uncovered tools dating back to the Middle Paleolithic, roughly 150,000 years old. Sharp-edged, chipped flint tools used by our ancestors, or Homo sapiens' distant relative, Homo neanderthalensis. Both lived side by side in the region of Mesopotamia at the time.
To je samozřejmě věc, která zůstane asi záhadou, nebo kterou.
We will probably never know who really made the tools, not without concrete anthropological evidence. The remains of one of the prehistoric people who inhabited the area. That is not very likely at all in a site like Erbil. In an inhabited area, that kind of find would be practically unique. So who used the tools, which were used to cut meat or to skin animals, will probably always remain a mystery.
The tools uncovered in Erbil are likely the oldest ever found in the area, although the exact date has yet to be determined.
Tahle informace je zatím předběžná, protože nás samozřejmě čeká.
We can't be certain of the exact age and if the items are older than an American find dating back 50 years, but theirs was some 150 kilometers away, so this is most definitely the oldest find in Erbil itself.
Tohoto výzkumu, který je ovšem také už 50 let starý.
The Czech team's work in northern Iraq began in 2006 and will wrap up with several publications of their findings later in 2010. But archaeologist Karol Nováček says Czech researchers hope to continue their involvement in the region well into the future.
Já jsem svým vzděláním a svou specializací
Regarding the Paleolithic, there is still plenty of research we could do to follow up, although that would require some heavier equipment. But there are also other possibilities. In 2007, original buildings of the citadel dating back to the Ottoman Empire, probably the only remaining intact examples in all of Iraq, were emptied of inhabitants in return for newer property. Careful renovation of the historic buildings was set to begin, but the plan hit a hurdle along the way. The buildings have been empty for some 2 years, which is not good, but the project should begin soon. It is our hope that we will also be able to conduct research there when things get underway.
Výzkumy i jinde v jiných částech tady iráckého Kurdistánu.
The building's inhabitants, the archaeologist points out, were interestingly not original owners with ties to the city, but actually Kurdish families from mountain regions that Saddam Hussein's regime forcibly tried to assimilate.
Czechs Today by Jan Bellinger brings us to the end of today's program. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, but until then, for myself, Sarah Borufka, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thanks for listening and goodbye.
Ici Radio Prague. Programme en langue française des émissions internationales de la radio tchèque Onde Courte. Pour bénéficier d'une agréable réception, voici la grille de nos horaires en temps universel et fréquence en kilohertz. Sept heures vingt-sept, Europe de l'Ouest. 5930. 8h30, 8h57, Europe du Sud-Ouest, Afrique du Nord-Ouest, 11600. 14h30, 14h57, Europe du Sud-Ouest, Afrique du Nord-Ouest, 11600. 17h30, 17h57, Europe de l'Ouest, 5930. 19h30, 19h57, Europe de l'Ouest, 6200, 23h, 23h57, Amérique du Nord, 5930. Nous vous invitons à l'écoute également sur le web. Pour cela, veuillez vous connecter au site www.radio.cz. Puis choisir le français en haut de la page d'accueil. Radio Prague est aussi sur le satellite. Vous trouverez toutes les informations sur notre site internet www.radio.cz.